The following is a collection of some of the best items on the Cornucopia Radio Show, broadcast on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM, and streamed to the world via the internet. All music played is either available via fair use agreement, or is podcast safe via the Creative Commons license. For more details, see the podcast credits on www.cornucopia-radio.co.uk.
Today has been coming for a long time. We have all seen the darkening clouds on the horizon. But, as I look across at you, my fellow podcast subscribers, I do not feel fear. Because I know, in your heart, each one of you knows you are part of a much greater movement. That podcasting has not yet even scratched the surface of what can be achieved. We stand here on top of this hill, each of us on our steed, sword in hand, looking out at the vast podcast directory. We may only be a small, occasional podcast without the marketing, money, or power to charge across the great iTunes kingdom. But our ideas, our creativity, our passion shall ride alongside us. The enemy are scattered. Their podcasts no longer speak to the people. So, I ask you all now, will you ride out into battle with the Cornucopia Radio Show podcast? And together, we will prove it does not matter how you have lived your life. It only matters how you live your life today. Are you with me? I said, are you with me? Then we cry havoc and let slip the dogs of war. Charge!
Radio show with Peter Beeston. Meaningless random words.
Welcome to Wireless Times, the show that takes you back to a time when a DJ was a dinner jacket.
Today we bring you a dramatization of one of Mr. Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes stories.
Be prepared to be truly mystified, or at least slightly bewildered, by Homes and Gardens.
Sherlock Holmes was in his room at £22... I'm sorry, I'll read that again. 221B, Baker Street, when there was a knock at the door, followed by the doorbell ringing, followed by someone rattling the letterbox.
Forgotten your key again, Watson?
How the blazes did you deduce that, Holmes?
Well, partly it was the way you knocked at the door. Partly it's the way you rang the doorbell. But mainly it was the insistent way that you rattled the letterbox.
Yes, I suppose it was a bit of a giveaway.
Well, you'd better come in.
More good thinking, Holmes. Anything in the Times, Holmes?
Yes, our brave lads have seen off another attempt by the Russians to topple us from the top spot in Europe.
Really? What was the score?
1-0.
By Jove, but that was close.
Yes, but you haven't come here to discuss football.
No, I've come to tell you we've been invited down to Professor Monsanto's for the weekend.
Isn't he a keen horticulturalist?
Yes, but his wife knows all about it. He grows edible roses. Has them for starters, main course, and dessert.
Wholemeal flowers? Sounds just the ticket.
Seems he just plants the bulbs and up they shoot.
Self-raising flowers? Even better. Where does he live?
He's got a pile at Great Bottomley.
You'll be taking your black bag, then.
That evening at dinner, Professor Monsanto expatiated on the benefits of genetic modification. Well, it was his house. He was entitled to.
I believe it will one day be possible to cross a monkey with a dense thicket and get a bush that can run for president. But now, gentlemen, I must bid you good night. I have to make an early start in the morning. It's unlikely I shall see you until later. You will find everything you require in the breakfast room. Good night.
Strange fellow. What he says is pure fantasy, of course.
On the contrary, Watson. I'm beginning to think there's nothing pure about Monsanto. Nice frock, though.
Yes, I thought you had your eye on him.
The following morning, Watson found himself alone in the breakfast room. He also found a note from Holmes. It read,
"Roses are red, violets are blue. By the tree that's mellow yellow, I'll look out for you. Wonder what that means."
Thinking no more of it, he took a light breakfast of toast, boiled eggs, devilled kidneys, kedgeree, stewed prunes, and a pot of tea. After which, not surprisingly, he went out into the garden, where he saw many strange things.
A King Edward's on a chaise longue. Must be a couch potato. What's this? A curious citrus plant.
A lemon tree, my dear Watson.
Holmes, but why the disguise?
You've already seen some of the many weird and wonderful genetic modifications that Monsanto has grown in this garden. And if he were here, I'm sure he would attempt to convince you that they were for the benefit of mankind. Those cauliflowers over there, for instance. Do you notice anything odd about them?
Why, bless my soul, they've got ears.
Precisely. Cauliflower ears. And I believe that they're listening to every word that we say, and they were related in some way to Monsanto.
Would that be such a bad thing?
Indeed it would. You see, I believe Monsanto means to replace politicians with mutant vegetables.
Would anyone notice?
Probably not, but would you really want a turnip at number 10?
I see what you mean. Or a cabbage as leader of the opposition.
No, Watson. There'll never be Greens in Parliament.
That's where you're wrong!
Monsanto!
Yes, I've already replaced half the cabinet with runner beans. The other half are has-beens.
You'll never get away with it. Not in that frock.
This Webley I'm holding in my hand says I will. Soon you and your amanuensis will be fit only for spreading on my beautiful garden.
He's talking manure, Holmes.
Stop, Rover! Rex! Heel! Come by, lassie!
Lestrade, what are you doing here?
Well, these dogs escaped from the police compound and I'm following a lead.
Well, while you're here, I'd be much obliged if you would arrest Monsanto.
On what grounds, Mr. Holmes?
The grounds of Great Bottomley.
No, you'll never take me alive!
As you wish, sir. You see, we're a service, not a force.
One day, all policemen will share your devotion to the public good, Lestrade. Now, if we hurry, we can catch the noon train back to London.
Tell me, Holmes, what made you suspect Monsanto?
Well, it was partly the way that the lilies winked at me as I passed. It was partly the saucy laughter coming from the passion flowers behind the gazebo. But mainly, it was something I found in the potting shed.
What was that, Holmes?
A seed catalogue from the Moriarty Institute of Garden Management and Weld Domination. Thank you.
That sketch was brought to you by Wireless Times.
The show that takes you back to a time when Big Brother was a fictional character from a freakish future.
I can't get enough of lesbians, you know.
Ronnie Corbett on Interactive 2.
That's disgusting. That's disgusting. How big's your boobies?
Intelligent.
Women are sex objects, yes.
Educational.
You ever been done with a strap on?
Witty.
Bend over, and if you feel a prick in your bottom, I swear it's a thorn from this rose I just bought you. I like that one. Super. Do you wash your bum with your bathroom sponge, you know? Yes.
Ronnie Corbett on Interactive 2.
Hello, my name's Mud. Today, I'm going to gouge out my left eyeball live on the air. Thank you.
Corny could be a radio show.
To Samantha Lavalamp, Care Assistant Manager of Re-Interpersonal Work Issues. Dear Mrs. Lavalamp, I am writing to you regarding our recent meeting, in which I lodged a formal complaint against our employers, the Industrial Accountant Merchant Facilitators of Mark Markson and Mark PLC. You suggested that I write this letter as a better way to structure the events and as a formal record of my complaint. I joined the firm in the summer of last year. The interview process went well, and I was relieved to see they had no problem with the fact I was a zombie. I explained that my flesh was slowly decomposing, that my movement was severely limited to a slow perambulation, and that on particularly bad days my speech was restricted somewhat to... They said this did not matter, as they liked my get-up-and-stagger attitude. In fact, we all had a little joke when I lurched forward to try and bite through the neck of one of the interviewers and taste their sweet, sweet flesh. It was only a month or so later that I began to realize that the firm was not at all zombie-friendly. I was given a formal complaint for devouring and eating three young work experience students. Jeffrey, the person who sits across from me, and who I suspect doesn't like me, is always asking if I was in the Thriller video, despite my repeated denial. He then normally remarks that all zombies look the same to him anyway, which I think is unbelievably zombiest in this day and age. I thought things couldn't get much worse, but during the Christmas party, I met Nicholas Staplegum, who, as I'm sure you know, is the vampire who works in the proactive real-world evaluation department. After a rather heated argument, I woke up the next day with a painful headache, two bite marks on my neck, and a newfound fondness for Bela Lugosi. As a fresh zombie vampire, I'm even more looked down upon by society, and made my work even more unbearable. I now had to stagger my way into work in the middle of the night and leave before sunset, just I'd be turned to dust. And also, let's be honest, the canteen really should rethink its main menu of slow roasted garlic with garlic trimmings, garlic sauce and garlic cream brulee. Also, why has Jeffrey suddenly taken up whittling? Especially as everything he whittles looks like a steak. And yes, although the coffee machine does serve blood, it's served cold, when surely every sane person knows it should always be dispensed at room temperature. As well, I suspect our firm is unaware that the scalable content-free night caretaker, Carl Cheeseburger, has a secret. As I worked through the night, trying to finish the Idiom Contract Paradigm account, and drinking another steaming cold cup of blood, I was confronted by the snarling, grisly, and feral Miss Cheeseburger in full werewolf mode. I woke up the next day with a painful headache, covered in bite marks, my left arm and right leg missing, and a newfound predilection to pedigree chum. Now, zombie, vampire, werewolves have never had it easy in this world, and I'm no different. My flesh is still rotting. I've got precious few limbs left. I'm always having to get off the couch. Nobody in the office scratches my belly when I roll over. And I'm currently having to shave 12 times a day. Also, despite how much you protest, I know it was Jeffrey who sent the email around the office about having your pets neutered. Sadly, things have got a lot worse since our last meeting. My frustration and anger at the treatment I have received led to me taking my own life. However, I failed to take into account the evil gypsy curse that was put on me shortly before the radioactive cloud, which caused my original zombification. Because of this, it means I am never able to leave this earthly plane. So now, because of my unfortunate suicide, I have to contend with being a zombie, vampire, werewolf, ghost for all eternity. My ghostly corporeal nature has solved some problems. I am now able to move through objects much more freely. But my lack of a physical presence means I can no longer do things such as wear a hat, smoke a pipe, or play the bagpipes. Three things I used to so love doing. Combine this with my current aversion to sunlight, crosses, silver bullets, garlic, crossing the streams, wooden stakes, Peter Cushing, chainsaws, Ouija boards, Michael Jackson, pitchforks, Yvette Fielding, and strange gypsy ladies, and you see why I have to regretfully resign my post. I hope the next cursed radioactive zombie vampire werewolf ghost you employ will have more luck than me. And besides, I saw Jeffrey in the corridor. And when he saw I'd become a ghost, he began chasing me with a vacuum cleaner. Yours sincerely, Harold Lionbar.
The Cornucopia Radio Show presents the 50 greatest moments in history. Not at all sponsored by Wikipedia. With me, Henry J. Malteser, history professor at Oxford. Community Centre. Part-time. Part 48. The event. Man doesn't land on the moon. The date. 20th of July. 1969.
I believe that this nation should commit itself to achieving the goal before this decade is out of landing a man on the moon and returning him safely to the earth.
We choose to go to the moon in this decade and do the other things, not because they are easy, but because they are hard.
Thankfully, it now seems that everybody agrees that the moon landings were faked. For far too long, people have relied on fact and evidence instead of giving in to the overwhelming amount of hearsay, conjecture, rumour, scientific ignorance and misunderstandings which I am now glad to see so prevalent in our modern society. But do you still really know what happened? What the real story is?
We've all been lied to by the man.
The moon landings were actually faked on a soundstage in Area 51.
Action!
Which is co-owned by the Illuminati and Freemasons. It was filmed using equipment recovered from the crashed alien spaceship at Roswell, and which had been tested before during the Philadelphia experiment. It was shot and directed by John F. Kennedy, who had wanted to get into movie making for a long time, and had to fake his own assassination a few years earlier in order to go underground and prepare for the role. Other than the so-called astronauts, the only other people on set were the musicians Elvis and John Lennon. Also present was the British politician Lord Lucan, and a young Diana Spencer, who happened to be looking after a newborn baby foal called Shergar at the time.
I knew it! The Daily Express was right!
They were all there by invitation, but had been warned never to divulge the secret of what was happening here, lest dire consequences be put into action. A few years later, people began to doubt the official line and started asking questions like, why is Elvis always hiding behind that rock on most lunar photographs? This meant a mass program of brainwashing was needed, and was done via barcodes, crop circles, chemtrails, and subliminal messages in Coca-Cola commercials. And so, ultimately, the public was once again kept in the dark.
Obey us.
However, sometime at the start of the new millennium, an important bunch of movers and thinkers, including a number of people from the Knights Templar, announced that they finally had concrete proof that the moon landings had been faked. Proof so strong that nobody anywhere would be able to doubt it. They announced the proof would be shown to the world's press on the morning of September the 11th, 2001, in New York. Which, as I'm sure you're not surprised to know, was just as Nostradamus had predicted they would over 400 years before. Next time, in episode 49, we'll be looking at the comical ways people used to try and stay attached to the ground before Newton invented gravity.
The Cornucopia Radio Show with Peter Beeston. Coming at you like a nuclear missile. Just faster, bigger, and dumber.
Hello, my name's Mud. Oh, sorry, facing the wrong way. Hello, my name's Mud, and today I'm going to gouge out my right eyeball live on the Cornucopia Radio Show.
Oh! Oh, my God! Thank you. Oh, sorry. It's over here. Thank you very much.
My name is George Takei. I play Mr. Sulu in Star Trek. I'm here to tell you, if you don't listen to Ronnie Corbett, I'm gonna bust your goddamn ass.
Captain, sailor, there's Klingons on the starboard bow.
Thank God it wasn't a joke about my sexuality.
Counselor, the firing quantum cases!
Honestly, this is so cliche.
Oh. Ah, you spine! Oh! Ah! Don't damn your dog! Ah!
Name, rank, and number. That's all you'll get out of me, you German swine. It doesn't matter how long you shine that light on me, I won't break. I'm not going to tell you about the crack squadron wading along the river, the surprise dawn attack, the two platoons of infantry that will advance with the armoured vehicles in a pincer movement on the farmhouse and the old church, while 2nd Battalion moves up along the canal, thus springing the trap, and a division of heavy artillery is brought forwards, enabling us to clear the ground west of the village and open up an infantry advance all the way down into Le Havre.
Hans, I want you to make a telephone call to Field Commandant Headquarters.
Yes, mein Captain.
Oh, shit.
Visit www.cornucopia-radio.co.uk and then email studio@cornucopia-radio.co.uk to get involved.
Five.
At number five, we have number eight. The third time it's been there in four attempts.
Four.
3.141 drops out the top five at four and is replaced with three.
Three.
Up 12 places in just 4 weeks. It's number one at number three.
Two.
It hasn't changed for 3 weeks. Number two is at number two.
One.
And thanks to the recent changes in negative number counting, it means we have a new number one. It's straight in for minus 9.
Across the city on 93.2 FM, and across the world on sheffieldlive.org.
That was the Cornucopia Radio Show. If you like us, please tell your friends. If you don't, well, just shut up and keep it to yourself. Also, don't forget, this is just a short example. If you wanna hear the full show, go to www.cornucopia-radio.co.uk.